Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, it's easy to think that we're normal, like we're just like in the majority.
Yeah, we're not normal.
And also, like,
you're listening to Feminists Don't Wear Pink, the podcast based on the book Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, a collection of writing by 52 women on what feminism means to them. I'm Scarlett Curtis. I'm a writer, activist, journalist, and very, very proud feminist. I'm also the curator of this book and the presenter of the podcast. During this series, I'm going to be talking to a few of the amazing contributors who've written our book to find out how they found their feminism and some of the lies that they've been told about what it means to be a woman. My guests today are two women who are very dear to my heart. Amica George and Grace Campbell came into my life last year, and together we organised the hashtag Free Periods campaign, fighting to end period poverty in the UK. Today, Grace and I run Pink Protest, which is our feminist activist collective. They are both incredible and inspirational women, and I can't wait for you to hear what they have to say. Both of you have written really incredible pieces in this book, and I think for me this whole book is about showing how feminism can be taken from an idea to actually an action and doing something and yeah. trying to change the world. And I feel our story is like a little bit of that, and I'm so proud of what we all did together. So I thought it might be nice to just chat about that. So Amica, how did you first get involved with Free Periods?
So I started Free Periods in April last year, and it was after reading about girls in the UK not being able to go to school because they can't afford pads and tampons. And I'm really lucky that I've never kind of suffered from period poverty before, and I'd never even heard of it before that point. So it really shocked me, and talking to my friends and family, it shocked them too. And no one seemed to be doing anything about it at the time, even though there was a lot of noise about the fact that it was happening and people were really angry about it, but people with political power and politicians weren't doing anything. So I kind of took to the internet and started a petition called Free Periods. And the idea is that the girls on free school meals would be given free menstrual products. And yeah, before I met you two, I was just kind of working really hard to raise the profile of the campaign and doing like some public speaking and interviews. And in May, when the general election was announced, I contacted all the political parties and said, you know, period poverty is happening and you really need to do something about it. And in the end, the Women's Equality Party and the Green Party put it in their manifesto, which was really amazing. Just to have the word periods in two manifestos was a really big step for feminism, just like people talking about periods for the first time. But obviously period poverty is still happening and we're all kind of still waiting for something to happen
yeah.
in the long term.
And then Grace, how did we meet Amica?
So we met Amica because we were on this journey discovering what we were going to do. We were making a series of films about activists and young activists and redefining the word activist. And then over the course of 2 days, Amica came in to do a short film for us, and we were like, oh wow, this is just something that we hadn't even realised was as bad as it is, and we need to do something about it. And then we started working with you, and then it was a kind of very natural,
and we met you because I got an email from someone in your school being like, I've heard, because we were doing this short film, we wanted to interview 40 yeah. women in 2 days, and I was madly emailing all these people, and then someone from your school emailed me being like, oh, there's this amazing girl at my school and you should talk to her.
It's so funny because she said that she told me about it and I said no because I was supposed to go on holiday. And then I cancelled the holiday for another long reason.
But I thought you were going to say to come and hospital. I'd be like, yes.
But I was thinking like the other day, if I had gone on that holiday and I hadn't met you, like how different everything
it would
be.
Crazy. Yeah.
So it's so funny.
Then what did we all do together?
So then we started conspiring and... Well, just to give the pink protest a little bit of context, but then what we did is we decided that we'd met so many incredible people doing these films, we had to kind of do something bigger with it. So we started building the pink protest, and then that just worked so perfectly with when we started working with you on Free Periods, because we were like, okay, this is the exact type of thing that we made this to do. Let's organise a real life protest, not just an Instagram movement. Let's organise a real life one where we can all come together and show that actually young people are physically active and they are engaged in these kinds of debates.
And I think for me, what I'm so proud of what we did together is that, you know, there can be a lot of criticism of feminism or activism online. And, you know, a lot of people saying like, it's just an Instagram post or it's just a website. Whereas I think the truth is that social media and the internet has given us the greatest tools in the history of the world to organise around feminism or activism. We basically organised the whole Free Periods over WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Yes, and then we promoted it on Instagram.
Yeah, and that was it.
Yeah, we could never have done it without it.
Mm.
We ended up making like a huge 50-person feminist WhatsApp group for Free Periods.
I think it still exists.
I think they're all still there waiting
what they can do next.
I know. It was quite scary at times, but also fun.
Yeah.
You can recommend starting feminist WhatsApp groups with your friends.
Yeah.
And it's just about giving the people that are doing that online the opportunity to take it one step further. So we started by building a website, and then we started doing a lot of stuff online and a lot of media stuff. And I think what was so helpful about us three doing it together, I don't know if you guys agree, but like we all kind of knew how social media worked. Mm. So we knew how to get people interested in this issue online.
Mm.
And then we just said that we were all going to meet outside Parliament Square.
Yeah. And then it was like the timing of it was the last day of the school term. So loads of the people that came were secondary school pupils, which I just thought was amazing.
Yeah, it was definitely young people who showed up. And that was what was amazing, because I don't know if adults would have expected that. As in, I didn't know how many people were going to come.
Yeah.
Even though like a lot of people had liked it on Facebook and stuff, you never really know if anyone more than like our friends were going to turn up. And then it was just incredible.
So it was mind-blowing.
So we said that we were going to organise this protest to really push the government one step further to make the change. We set up on Parliament Square. We had all these speakers. We had all these banners.
And then we were like, maybe there's not going to be a crowd. There's going to need to... Maybe we'll whisper and they'll hear, because there'll be no one here.
And then like 2,000 young people showed up, which was incredible.
Amazing. We'll never know exactly how many. It was. I just remember me standing on that stage and you just could just see people. Like even on the other side of the road, there were people. And It was mad. Surreal.
And then what happened after that?
And then we met Jess and Paula, Jess Phillips and Paula Sheriff, the MPs in Parliament, which was really cool. And we kind of, I think we discovered that MPs are actually really funny, funny people. And they were gossiped a lot, which is funny. And then in March, the government announced that they would be giving 1.5 million to end period poverty. And that was from the tampon tax fund. So it's kind of, me and Grace were talking about this before, that it's amazing to think that even though we're still paying tax on tampons and pads, it's going to a really good cause and it's helping people, which is like what tax should be about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually it's like what we were talking about. I think we were talking about this after Louisa Omerland's show, The Incredible Politics for Bitches, that actually what should maybe continue with this is that we keep paying tax, we keep paying VAT on tampons, but all of that money just goes to poverty, because we can afford to pay VAT on tampons. It makes more sense for that to, but sadly they never distribute money where you want it to go.
Exactly.
But that would really solve the problem, because it's £50 million tampon tax fund.
What was it that made you turn your feminism into actual action?
Like none of this, I never really expected any of this. As in, when I started it, I really was convinced that I would get like maximum 50 signatures, and now it's at 180,000. And it's just, I think it's just social media, it's the internet that helps people. Like at the time I was 17 and at school, and it's literally anyone who can just go to the internet and you can do what you know and just literally put up an idea or just something that you don't think is right. And there's always going to be people who feel as strongly as you do about something. There's always going to be people like you who want to work together. And that's, I think, where like the magic is, as corny as it sounds. Like that's where, when you connect with people literally all over the country, all over the world, who want to help and who want to get involved, that's when it grows. So yeah, I don't really know. I kind of just started it very spontaneously and randomly, and then
I loved that.
It was cool.
What's your earliest memory of being a feminist and kind of realizing that was something you were interested in?
I feel I have, like, without sounding like I'm the best, I feel like I've always been a feminist. Like when I was 6 years old, I cut off all of the hair from my Barbie dolls, and I was like, it's unfair that they have to look like this, and I like uglied them up because I thought it was bullshit that we were. I remember sort of feeling these things from a very young age. And maybe that's because my mum was very kind of, she used to talk about all these things, and she was always very vocal about like Disney and, you know, the things that kids are raised to think are like what you should become.
I think with me, when I was like 10 or 11, I would have been like, oh yeah, like I'm a feminist, but I never really understood what it meant. Like I think I kind of grew up surrounded by people who would call themselves feminists, but personally, I didn't have like a big feminist awakening or anything like that. And then I would say just like starting Free Periods made me realize just like how necessary it is. Because before that, I would have been like, oh yeah, I'm a feminist, but like so are all my friends. And like if I asked my brother, maybe he would say he was. But like I didn't really think it was that big a deal until I realized how big a deal it was.
And I also think that's really interesting because that's Free Periods is an issue that one of the reasons I find it so fascinating, because it links to period poverty, which is a really huge crisis and something that we should all be working to fix, even if you're not a feminist. But then it also, the reason that crisis has come about is because of the shame so many women still feel around their periods and around their bodies. What is that something you've thought about a lot?
I think it's kind of, I think I've always grown up with this idea that periods are gross and disgusting, and I think that's just something that nobody's really doubted for a long time. And I do feel like it's changing now. I feel like it's not just us, it's a lot of people kind of globally who are kind of questioning that, and it kind of really is intertwined with the whole feminist movement that periods are so kind of ingrained with everything to do with womanhood, but why can't we talk about them? And it does obviously all stem back to the fact that it isn't exclusively women's thing, so you know, women have to be kept quiet, and it kind of like dates back to centuries and centuries ago, but that doesn't mean that it can't change now. And I think as soon as you kind of talk to people about feminism, especially talk to like your friends. Like I think when I was younger, I had one friend who I like confided in that I'd started my period, and it was such a big deal for me to do. Whereas now, like I go into graphic detail with all my friends, and it's just not a big deal anymore. And like it doesn't take that much to just get that conversation started. And obviously when everyone can relate, it makes it so easy. But it's just like that first step of just saying like, oh, like even if you say, has anyone got a pad? Like sometimes people get embarrassed about that.
I know, I was once working in an office and this girl emailed me from the seat next to me to say, have you got a tampon?
Wow.
I just went yes in person and gave it to her, because it's like that's the thing that we fear, like someone else knowing that there's blued there's blued coming out from our womb. But there is blood.
So simple. Ashamed when I started my period. Like I didn't even tell my mum for ages. And she talked to me about it, but I just felt it was like I'd heard so much about what it meant and what does it mean to be a woman? I'm 12 and, you know, I don't know what that means. And it's so weird that we talk about it like it's this very emotional thing when it's just a bodily function. Like
I also think it's this thing that I also feel about pubic hair. We make more of a big deal because we think it's what men and society think, but they don't struggle digesting it as much as we think. So like, you know, women are taught to think that men won't sleep with you unless you have no pubic hair, but that isn't the case. Like 99% of men like really don't care that much, you know what I mean? But we in our heads are like, no, I'm not sexy enough to do it and the same with periods. It's like we think that men are going to think we're disgusting, society thinks we're disgusting, but actually if you know, when you see an image of a woman who's been bleeding, it's just very beautiful.
painful, and you can just get over it.
I'm sorry, it's like bleeding anywhere else. Like, it shouldn't be thought of as a different thing just because it's coming out of your vagina.
Yeah. Me and my mum would never have talked to my dad about periods, because it's like exactly what you're saying. Like, he's not going to like that, and he'll think it's gross. Yeah. And then when we started doing all the campaigning, he loved it.
Yeah.
And when he came to protest, he bought his first pack of pads and was like so proud. Oh.
The thing that's so cool is, like, my dad used to be pretty, like, he's quite like, don't talk to me about it. Like, when I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to go change my tampon, he'd be like, and then he came to our protest, and then since
right by the stage
then,
the whole time.
I know, but he like wanted to speak. It was so embarrassing. I was like, just like, oh, woman. But then last week we were on holiday, and I got up from the dinner table and went to the toilet. I came back, and he was like smiling at me, and I was like, what? He was like, you've come on your period. But he was like really excited about it.
That's so funny.
He was like, but I thought that is a real transformation. Completely. I think that's a direct result of what we've done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really weird conversation with my brother the other day about clots. Exactly. Like, I feel like he was just really curious. It was kind of worrying. But like, I think it's like just this thing that, like, it must be weird for boys who have sisters or whatever who go through this literally every month, but they have no idea what's going on. And, like, they probably don't even know, like, what a pad is or how it works or anything like that. And it's just kind of, once you start talking, there's actually a lot that they don't know.
And I think we bring the shame upon ourselves because we think it's shameful.
Yeah.
No, you know, we're the ones telling ourselves and telling generations and generations. And all we have to do to change that is stop, like, just be like, it's great.
Exactly.
Totally. Yeah. That's why we need to kind of, like, keep, especially changing the perception of periods in the media. Like, I will always, whenever I can make something and a woman is bleeding in it, do it. Because the more you see that, the more times I see a picture on Instagram of someone who's come on their period, the better I feel about my period. Mm-hmm. So it's just about seeing more people like you and having better representation of periods and them not being blue. The blue.
Blue. So, Grace,
you've
been talking very heavily about periods, but your piece in the book is about another aspect of the female anatomy. What's your piece about?
It is about masturbation. I was so bad that I was going to say female masturbation.
Yeah.
And it's actually called the female wank, and the female's crossed out because it should just be masturbation, like men masturbating, and it's a wank, like how we associate wanking with men. And it's just a kind of like collection of sentences, maybe it's a poem, don't really know, about wanking, my relationship with wanking, and how I came to wank first, and then the taboo and the stigma and the shame that I felt growing up around masturbating, and, you know, no one ever teaching me about it. And I think that's something that we are now doing work around our activist life with the campaign #GirlsWank2, which is sort of just aiming to destigmatise masturbation for women and get rid of the shame.
And I think it's another thing, just like periods, where, you know, no one ever talked to me about masturbating growing up. I had no idea what it was. If I'd heard about it, in relation to women, I thought that it was like this really shameful thing that was like proof that you were kind of gross and disgusting. And I felt so ashamed. I had no idea, and my friends did it. I felt so bad. And I actually think you were one of the first friends I talked to about wanking. And it was even just that one conversation was such a relief.
It was liberating,
That I was like, oh, we need to do this for everyone. Like, because otherwise you end up with two situations, either women don't, or they do and they feel awful about themselves, and neither are great.
And also, it is good for you.
Yeah.
Like, it is good. I was stressed yesterday and then I had a wank and I felt better. Like, that is the thing. Yeah. And men treat it and talk about it as it's the same, but they're allowed to. They are given the space to say, oh, I just, like, had a bad argument with my girlfriend, so I just, like, went and had a wank in the toilet.
Yeah.
And that's, like, totally normal. But we need to talk about that because women are missing out on this amazing experience that can be really relieving for you. And I have friends who have never masturbated.
Yeah,
and I
think so many.
You're 24, nearly 25, and you're losing out from good orgasms and then therefore good sex because you're not doing it. So,
yeah. And, like, you often don't know how to teach your partner as well.
Exactly.
And again, like, it does link to, like, achieving gender equality, because when men can talk about women wanking in the same way that they talk about it themselves, in the same way as periods, like, that's when we're equal. When it's not thought of, like you were saying, it's not thought of as the female wank, it's just the wank. Like, it's just not a big deal. Who does it? It's just whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's when we can, you know, think of ourselves as having achieved equality.
Yeah.
Totally. And it plays into, you know, like the gender gap, the idea that heterosexual sex ends when the man orgasms means that the woman's orgasm isn't seen as important. And that means that women in sex aren't seen as important and valuable, and their worth is less. And we need to make that go away and make it so that, like, our orgasms are as equal as each other's.
Yeah. Also, I mean, in general, if bringing our bodies pleasure is something we're chronically ashamed of, like, what does that say about how we view our right to happiness on a much bigger picture, I think?
But that's also, like, our, like, the way that we view our vaginas.
Yeah.
Like, we're taught to think that they're, like, gross and don't look at it.
Yeah.
Like, and that there's, like, you know, the perfect one, you definitely don't have it, so don't even think about the fact that you have it, because you don't.
And people getting, like, plastic surgery.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I see an amazing woman in New York for bikini waxes, and because feminists can get bikini waxes too.
Absolutely.
And she was saying that all she wants to do with her life is make a book of photos of people's vaginas, because if people could realise how weird and different they all are, no one would ever feel ashamed again or spend money on, you know, labiaplasties or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, it's so dangerous to think that, like, most of us growing up thinking that we have not nice genitalia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we project that into the world.
Yeah.
Completely.
One of the concepts behind this book is kind of looking at all the lies that we've been told about what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a feminist and what it means to be a man. And I think I felt like I wasn't a feminist from birth at all, even from like 10. I think, you know, it was something my mum never really talked to me about, even though she embodied a lot of what feminism is. And I definitely saw feminists as something that was like unattractive and didn't shave her legs, and, you know, and obviously that has all changed, but in my head. But what are you, for you guys, what are some lies that you feel you've been told about what it means to be a feminist or a woman?
Well, one thing that is really like burning in my stomach at the moment that I do want to talk about is, and I don't know if it's like a lie, but I think we're taught to compete with other women and size ourselves up next to other women, and we need to stop, because it is so, and I'm a complete victim and guilty person of it. I do it so much naturally, but it's so dangerous and it makes no sense, because it's preventing us from supporting other women and helping other women up, and it means that when one woman gets up, then it's like no one else, there's not space for anyone else to follow them. So I just think that's like a lie that we've been told, that we should compare ourselves to other women, and we should always feel that there has to be a woman that we're like striving to be like or striving not to be like. Just be individual.
Yeah, but also it's this idea that there's only room for one of us. I think I've really internalized that, you know, just having seen so many industries where it's true, like so many industries where you'll see a whole table of powerful men and one woman. And you do get this idea that if she's similar to me, we're in direct competition and only one of us can succeed, which is just crazy.
Yeah, and exactly. That, and so that's another lie, that there's only ever going to be room for one. Actually, if the one that got there made it their mission to make it 50-50 or whatever, then that's not the case.
And also just the idea, it's so stupid to think we wouldn't be able to do things better in groups, because like we would have never done anything if we weren't in a group. And even just meeting both of you has taught me so much about like community and working with other people, and it's been incredible and such a gift.
I think that is so, like, I really hope that changes for future generations of women,
because I do think it is still quite instilled at a young age. Like we still are taught to be like academically and just like in life you're still always in competition, and it's just, I think it's also like the way we've been conditioned through like films and TV as well, like girls fighting over a boy and like all this stuff, it all plays into that same mindset that you have to beat people.
What about another lie that you've been told?
Well, I was thinking it's kind of not a specific one, but just the whole idea, like you were saying, like shaving your legs and stuff, just this whole idea of femininity, and that like you can't be feminine and a feminist, and like I think that's just the biggest thing, that it takes a lot of work to get people's mindset to change. Just that, and also the idea that boys can be feminists, I think that's something that we are still kind of working on as a society to get over, the fact that anyone can be a feminist. It's not just like a radical female.
Yeah. How have you found it with boys your age while you're doing all this so young?
I think, I mean, obviously from the people who have supported the campaign, it's largely female and it's largely teenage girls. But then there are boys, and that we saw like a lot of boys at the protest came, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And like even my brother, I think it's just kind of talking to people about it, and when they understand what it is. Like I remember you saying, Scarlett, you talked to your brother about it and he didn't know anything about periods until you started talking to him about it. And it's just that, and when you get that started, then there is, you know, that interest.
Completely. And then it's something they're not, I think so much of this comes from fear. Like it's then something they're not scared of for the rest of their lives. They understand it. So often we turn like misunderstanding into anger, I think.
Yeah, it's true.
And I feel like that's where a lot of boys can be coming from.
Mm.
Completely. For both of you, what is the best part of being a feminist activist? Which is how I'm calling, what I'm describing you both as.
That I'm going to be permanently single.
Do you feel that way though?
I mean, I feel permanently single, yes. I'm a feminist activist, I'm not sure. I don't know, I think, no, I don't really mean that, but maybe
I know what you mean.
It is hard though.
Any single man out there listening.
Yeah.
It is hard though, because like if I've talked to boys and like said I run a campaign, they'll be like, oh, what's that about? And I'll be like, oh, periods. And I'll be like, oh, and then it'll just get like really awkward and it's like, oh God.
That's how I felt about Girls Rank 2. Yeah. So I'm like, we talk about, so we started the Girls Rank 2 like movement. It's not really a campaign, we're not trying to change the law of ranking, but and when you talk about it with men, it's like their penises shrivel up. They literally just like don't want it. They don't want to hear you speak about this. Like they don't want you to be liberated to have a conversation
about
it.
They want to leave so quickly, especially with like male friends of my parents. I'll be at the dinner table and then you're like, so what I'm doing for a living at the moment is like mostly periods and wanking campaigning. And you can just see them be like, I wish you were an accountant. I have so much more to say.
That is definitely, it's really interesting actually, like how uncomfortable that can make a group of men.
I know, and definitely. I do sometimes feel like we're in this very lovely bubble where we hang out with a lot of feminists. And
that's the thing. And that's what I was going to say about, like, one of the best and worst things about being a feminist is that when you, like, when I met you, it's like, oh my God, they're like all these people and, you know, we're so similar and what we want to achieve and have all these ideas. But then it can also be hard, like you were saying, when you meet people who actually wouldn't call themselves feminist or, like, don't really know what it is. And then it's up to you to tell them, but then they don't always agree. And it's just kind of, I don't know, it's, yeah, it's easy to think that we're normal, like we're just like in the majority.
Yeah, we're not normal.
And also, like, you have to work with other people. So, like, there are going to be times in all of our experiences working as feminist campaigners that we'll meet people who aren't pro-feminism, but who we're going to have to get on our side.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a huge big thing that we're going to have to be able to, and I definitely have to get better at, is, like, not just thinking that they're a wanker.
Yeah. And also, but also that someone can be a feminist and be really different from you.
Yeah.
I think that's been a big thing for me as well. Like, even just reading through this whole book, you're like, oh my God, there are so many different ways that you can do this, and no one way is right and no one way is wrong. It's just, I really do think that's sometimes where we stab ourselves in the foot, is when we try and define an exact way to be a feminist.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
actually, like, we have met so many people, even within like period poverty campaigning, we've met so many people that are very different.
And but also, that's why this book is going to be groundbreaking.
Yeah.
No, seriously. Because that's what it's doing. It's like, it's saying all of this from modern, progressive women from all over the shop. It's saying that there is no one type of being a feminist. Yeah. There just isn't.
So it's just such a range from people that obviously everyone's heard of, but also that we haven't. And it's like, you don't have to be really rich, you don't have to be famous, you don't have to be a celebrity to be like, to be a feminist or to have like a big story.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
There's an amazing piece by Angela Yee, who's an American DJ, where she says that she thought feminism was just for white ladies without bras on.
So
common misconception. It's actually not true.
I know. Yeah. We're giving,
I think all three of us are wearing bras.
I am
today.
Yeah, and only two of us are white ladies. Okay, so I think to end, I want to ask both of you, what is one piece of advice that you would give a young, burgeoning feminist activist? So maybe this is someone who's realised they're a feminist already and wants to actually turn that into doing something about it.
I would say find your community, because if you haven't found them yet, they are definitely out there.
Yeah.
And you will feel so much better about everything once you found them and once you have that, whether it's just online or you know some of them physically. Like, find your people who you can stand on the shoulders of.
Yeah.
And if you can't find one, message the Pink Protest.
Yeah, yeah, message us. Yeah. We'll put you in touch with people. Look at hashtags often. Really.
Yeah, that's
or
true.
Like forums or little groups. Or the first online community I found was a Twitter knitting group.
Wow.
And they were my friends for
exactly.
years.
Exactly, there's always going to be something for you.
Literally, every niche you'll find something.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of linked to that, I would just say talk to people about it. Like, it's really easy, like we're saying, to think everyone agrees with you, or maybe like you're the only one who thinks that. But just kind of talking also to people who you don't think will agree with you or don't know enough about feminism. Like, if you have brothers, talk to them, talk to your dad, and just kind of, yeah, educate people and educate yourself as well. Just, like, yeah, make sure that you know what you're talking about, because then if someone does ever challenge you or confront you, you know you're right, you know? Like, you feel confident in that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not that hard. I mean, there's lots of books out there. You can read this book.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I think we do, as women, often think we need to be more qualified than we are. Like, you just have to read a little bit about what interests you and then start exploring that more with people that are like you.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, or even if you didn't, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure you subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, published by Penguin Random House on the 4th of October 2018, is available to buy now via the link in the description of this episode. All of the royalties from each book sold go to the amazing UN organisation Girl Up, who is supporting girls across the world. For more information and to join our gang, please follow us on Instagram at feminists. Thank you so much to Audio Boom for helping us get it out there, and to the wonderful Pink feminists who've joined us as guests. If you enjoyed this episode, we have some really fun feminist events coming up with even more of our contributors, and we would love to have you. There's a link to our website where you can buy tickets in the description of this episode, and I cannot wait to see you there.
I've got a good story on that.
About period stuff?
I actually leaked in this dress just last week.
Really?
When I was at dinner with my dad.
Oh my gosh. Mm.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.